So I know some of you are kind of new here. So let me just very briefly talk about what we've been doing here. This series we started more than a year ago now. So some of you who are new, you're joining right in the middle of this series. And the Yoga Sutra study is all about the understanding of the concepts of yoga presented to us by Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras. And there are four chapters in the sutras. And chapter one is called Samadhipada, which just talks about the basic definition of yoga, etc. Second chapter is all about the eight limbs of yoga, the introduction to the eight limbs of yoga, basically. Third chapter talks about the supernormal powers that the practice of yoga can bring us. And the fourth chapter talks about the final liberation or the final goal of yoga, which is to attain the state which he calls Kaivalya, or the final liberation, you can call it, freedom. Okay, now there are 195 sutras. Now, rather than going through the sutras one by one from chapter one all the way down, you know, what I have been doing is to kind of group them into different groupings, so to say, different concepts, different ideas, and then bring them together. And that's how we have been doing it in the past. All right, so currently we are going through this chapter two, where Patanjali started with this whole concept of the five kleshas. And I'm just going to go through this extremely fast, all right? So there are these concepts of, so far what we have covered, I'm going to go through very quickly so that, you know, we kind of catch up and see if we can make some sense out of it, okay? So he starts out with this whole concept of Kriya Yoga, where he says, these three elements, the tapas, swadhyaya, and ishwar pranidhana, which is, tapas is austerities, swadhyaya is self-study, and ishwar pranidhana is the surrender to the supreme being. So he says these three, when you do these three practices, it's called Kriya Yoga, and it brings you very close to the state of samadhi. That's what it says, okay? So he says it diminishes your suffering, diminishes your suffering, minimizes the afflictions, and also helps you attain samadhi. That's the three practices. Then he goes through these five kleshas, five types of suffering. So this is important to know. So the most important to understand is that why we suffer at all, it's because of our ignorance. What are we ignorant about? Ignorant about our own self. Ignorant about not knowing who we are in reality. Okay, we think we know who we are. We think, you know, that I think I know my name is Subhash and I'm a yoga instructor and probably a very good instructor or a poor instructor, you know, whatever. You know, but all that is my understanding of who I am. All right? But all that is that reality? Is that the ultimate truth as to who I am? Or is there something beyond all that that's my true reality? That's the main question that Patanjali is trying to answer. Is that all that is about me? You know, my physical appearance, the way I think, the way my thoughts are, the way my intellect behaves, etc., etc. And all these things are actually because of that ignorance that I don't know myself, so the ego takes over. That's what egoism is all about. Okay, so egoism takes over, and then I start thinking, oh my God, I'm so good, I'm so bad, I'm poor, I'm rich, I'm ugly, I'm handsome, and all that good stuff, you know, that we always have to go through. And that egoism brings about attachments. I like this, I hate this, I love it, I don't like it. Okay, and because I'm attached, I want more of it. Because I hate it, I want nothing to do with it. All right? Things like that, and they cause suffering, fears, all kinds of mental phobias in the mind. All right? So that's what is happening. That's because of our ignorance, of not knowing who I am, the ego takes over, and therefore we suffer. Because the ego only knows something good or something bad, nothing in between. All right? So that's the five kleshas that he talked about. All right, let's skip all this now. All right. And then he says that, you know, if you want to eliminate these kleshas, these afflictions, these sufferings, then you have to understand, you know, how to go about it, right? The only way, he says, you can eliminate the very deepest rooted, you know, those kleshas which are rooted at the very deepest levels of our subconscious, okay, they can be only eliminated by going back to our true source, okay? And I'm going to get to that chart later as to what that source is and what that means, okay? There's another chart coming up. We talked about that earlier. And this whole thing has to do with this concept of Purusha and Prakriti. Those are the two terms you will have to kind of keep in mind and understand what they are. Purusha and Prakriti. All right? Does anybody know what they are from our previous discussion? Anybody want to chime in? What's Purusha and what's Prakriti? Somebody? Nobody? I'm sure somebody knows.
Hi, Subhash, it's Karen. I think Prakriti is nature, the world that we see. And we're a part of that. And Purusha is our true self.
Yes, our true self, consciousness, pure being. Very good. So those are the two concepts, and they come to us from this whole philosophy called Sankhya. Okay, and we did go through that briefly many times as to what Sankhya is all about. And we are going to go through that one more time as we come to those slides again, because it talks about that here. Because this chapter 2 is a nice combination of Sankhya philosophy, karma theory and all that. All right? So those kleshas, which are deep-rooted in our subconscious, they can only be eliminated by going back to our source, which is the main prakriti, as we call it. And I'll talk about that later again. But those which are not so deep, we can just meditate on them and then get rid of them. That's what it says. All right? So these are the things we talked about last time. And then all these kleshas, all these five that we have, ignorance, egoism, raga and dvesha, likes and dislikes, and the whole concept of this fear, etc., they are the ones which propel us to do things, because they are interacting with the three gunas. Does everyone remember the three gunas? Who can name the three gunas? That's important to remember. What are the three gunas?
It's tamas, rajas, and sattva.
Tamas, rajas, yeah, and sattva. Okay, very good. Sattva, rajas, and tamas. Okay. Now they interact, and then they, because of the ego, you know, they activate some of these ragas and dveshas, all these likes and dislikes, and that's what propels us to do stuff. Whether we want to eat something, we want to go somewhere, do something, read something, or whatever, okay? All our actions, hurt somebody, whatever. Now, every action, every thought that we have creates an impression in the mind. It becomes a karma for us. It becomes a karma, means it goes into our bag or collection of karmas, okay? And then there are, you know, good karmas and bad karmas, etc. There, again, in our ancient texts, they will tell you what kind of action will give you good karma, what kind of action will give you bad karma. Okay? So, this bag is what actually goes with us in all subsequent lives also. So future life, this part of this bag, not this entire bag, some part of this bag is going to be given to us. And it's going to be, we have to live through that bag in the whatever next life is. Okay, so now, the question that Eleanor had earlier was, can good karma wipe out bad karma? Right? That's the question. The answer is yes and no. The stuff that we have already been assigned, that we have to live through this life, that cannot be wiped out. We have to live through it. For example, if we are destined, if our karma says that I'm just picking some silly thing. Let's say it says, I'm going to have cancer when I'm 55 or so. I mean, this is just an example, right? Can I become free of that karma by doing some good karma? Apparently not. Because that is what is called the prarabdha karma. Remember, there are three types of karmas that we talk about. Sanchita karma, prarabdha karma, and agami karma. Okay. All right. So, you know, we have to go through this prarabdha karma no matter what happens. Even the people who get fully liberated, totally, you know, they are called jivan muktas. Jivan mukta is a person who attains liberation while still living in this body. Okay. They're liberated. That means they will not accumulate any more karma. But will they not get sick? Will they not get injured? They will. Because if that's written in their karma, they will go through all that. Okay? That's what it means when you say you're jivan mukta. So, Eleanor, so the answer is, because even though the person is liberated, right? He is not accumulating any more karma. But the prarabdha karma, which he came with, which says that you are going to get sick at the such and such age, or you're going to lose money here, or you could do this, or this is going to happen, that cannot be obliterated. That's what is meant by, you know, that prarabdha karma. You have to live through it, no matter what. Even if you're fully liberated. Alright? When you're fully liberated, that means you will never be reborn. And yet, this life, whatever was dished out to you, you have to live through it. Okay? Does that make sense?
I guess I'm just coming at it from the background of a person who's had a Christian background, where you always can do things to, I guess, repent of your bad deeds and atone for your sins and such. So I guess that makes sense. Yes, it makes sense.
Okay. All right. So we have somebody who just joined recently. Can you... Is that Bhargavi?
Yes. Hello. Namaste. This is Bhargavi.
Can you turn your video on?
It's not working. I tried and then I got disconnected 3 times.
Oh, that's okay. All right. Go ahead. Go ahead. Introduce yourself.
This is Bhargavi Malapaka. I wanted to know more about Yoga Sutras. I've been wanting to learn them since I was a kid. It didn't happen before. Now that there is an opportunity, I just wanted to learn it.
Very good. Thank you, Bhargavi. Well, welcome.
Okay. Subhash, you have a question.
Yes.
So, Sanchit Karma and Prarabdha Karma,
right,
are they same or different?
No, Prarabdha Karma is a subset of the Sanchita Karma. Sanchita Karma is like the big bag, like the big full, your bank balance. Okay? So out of that full bank balance, that full karma, when you are given a new birth, at that time you're dished out a certain subset of that karma that you have to go through in this life. That's called the Prarabdha Karma.
I see. Okay, got it.
Okay? So Prarabdha is what you're dished out for this particular lifespan only. So, So, you know, what we were saying is these kleshas, they are the root cause of all these karmas, because this is what propels us to do actions. And when we have these karmas, okay, then they will bring up fruits, as they say, fructify, or they will bring up fruits. When do they do that? Either in this life or in a future life. There is no way to tell when that fruit is going to happen, when that karma is going to bring that effect out. It could be in this life, drishta or adrishta. Drishta means this life, which is what we are seeing, which is what we are going through. And adrishta means which is not seen yet. That means it's a future life. Okay? All right. So that's what we did last time. Okay, and then this is a very simplistic statement from Patanjali that the results that we will see of our karma in a future life, for example, will be of three types, three categories. Okay, what are these three? Jati means you will be born in a different category of living being. You could be born as an animal or as a human being, etc., etc. Okay, then Ayu means your lifespan. How long is it going to be your lifespan? Just 5 months, 5 years, etc., etc. All that is predetermined. And finally, Bhoga means what kind of experiences you're going to have in your next life. Experiences mean, are you going to have pleasant experiences, unpleasant experiences, you know, lots of different types of experiences can be had. All right. So, I think that's where we stopped last time. Does anybody remember? Number 13? I think, I have my notes here. Hold on a second.
That's where we stopped.
Yeah, that's what I've got written down too.
Okay, very good. Okay, so basically we are saying jati, ayu, bhoga, those are the three categories. Jati means what kind of birth you will have, and ayu means the lifespan, and bhoga is all the experiences that you will have. All right? Okay, so this is, again, the next sutra is, so we have been kind of, for those who are new, I don't know if you're interested in this, but we have been going through these sutras by first reading the Sanskrit part, and then going through these individual words one at a time so that I can explain you the meaning of each word. In my mind, that helps understand the overall context, overall meaning of the sutra much better. Okay, if that's okay, anybody have objection to this? Anybody does not want to learn Sanskrit at all? Speak up, we can skip this part then. You don't have to. Anybody wants to do it? Yes.
Yeah, of course. I think it's good to have the Sanskrit version of that as well, no?
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that too.
Okay, so then let's go through the individual words now. So the words are te, and this because in the live, you know, when we have interactive live sessions, you know, one to one, face to face, then I can make you repeat these words. But now it's going to be hard, so don't worry about that for now. But let me break these into individual words and then we'll go through the meaning. Okay? So the words are te hlad paritap phalaha punya apunya hetutvat. So that's the Sanskrit phrase. So the words are halada. Halada means pleasure. Halada means something that gives you joy. Paritapa means something that gives you pain or suffering. Alright? So the phala means the results or the fruits of your action. They will bring you either pleasure, joy, something that you find, you know, likable, or paritapa. Paritapa means suffering in a sense, okay? And what does that depend on? That depends on whether what the action was punya or apunya. Punya means good deeds, benevolent deeds, deeds that are defined in our ancient scriptures as good deeds, okay? And apunya means the another word is papa. That's another one. Papa is all the sins or the sinful activities that you do or the bad deeds that you do. Papa or punya and papa, those are the two words, but he has used punya and apunya, which is the same thing, okay? So the results of your karma will be in the form of pleasure or suffering, which will depend on whether the deeds that you are being worked on were punya or benevolent deeds, good deeds, or apunya or sinful deeds or bad deeds. All right. So that's this sutra. So remember, I already talked about these three types of karma: prarabdha karma, allocated at the time of birth, and sanchita karma is the accumulated, like the bank balance, total accumulation of karma over multiple lifetimes. Okay, this has been going on for millennia. Okay, multiple lifetimes. And the agami karma is the current actions, and they will then bring about, now they are getting collected into our bag of karmas. Whatever we do today, tomorrow, etc., etc., these are the new karmas being added to the storehouse of karma. Alright, so these are the three types of karma, and then everything eventually will go back into the, at the time of death, it will go back and get merged with the sanchit karma, the first kind, the second kind here mentioned, okay? So it goes back and merges into the sanchit karma, and then from there we are doled out another set of prarabdha karma for our next life. So that's how this whole thing goes, okay? So the whole, you know, what you get is, you know, what you put in. So as they say, as you sow, so shall you reap. I mean, this is a very famous saying, and it's almost exactly the same thing as a part of this karma theory. All right. And what you reap will be not necessarily in this birth, maybe in a future birth. Okay. And karmas bring fruit not necessarily in this life, but in a future life as well. All right. So any questions on that? That was a fairly straightforward sutra. Very, very common in our Indian culture. Everyone knows that. Okay. So let's move on to number 15. So the sutra is, let me just sip water. Is parinam tap sanskar dukkhaihi guna vritti virodhach dukkham eva sarvam vivekinaha. Okay, so that's the sentence in Sanskrit. So let me just break these words and then give you individual meaning of the individual words. Okay, the first word is the concept here is that for a person who is known as Vivekin in Sanskrit, Vivekin is one who has attained a state of discriminatory wisdom. That means he has gone through this whole practice of yoga for a long time, maybe multiple lifetimes, and now he has attained a state where he has become very clearly knowledgeable about his true identity, where he has become Vivekin, as they call it. Okay, that means he knows what is right, what's wrong, what's real, what's unreal, and he knows his own true self. All right. So for that person, he says that everything is dukkham, everything. Sarva means everything. He knows that this life is only full of dukkham or suffering, nothing else. Okay. And why does he know that? Because of these reasons. Okay, so the reasons given are why the wise person knows that everything is suffering, because we are going through these things. First one is parinama, Parinama means change, transformation, okay? You know, something that keeps changing, mutation going on in every aspect of our life, that's parinama. Again, tapa means suffering again, and it's basically, you know, these commentators again talk about the same thing. You know, tapa means those three kinds of suffering, and I'll come to that, okay? All right? And sanskara. Samskaras, we know that these are the past impressions that are hidden in our subconscious levels, okay? And they bring about all the actions that we go through, all right? So because of this suffering that is caused by parinama or transformation, tapa, which is all the pain that we have, and samskara is all the impressions that we have in our subconscious levels. So that's number part one, okay? So we have suffering because of these three. The second concept here is guna vritti virodha. Okay? So what it says is we have these three gunas, alright? And we have the vrittis in the mind. Remember, does everyone know what a vritti is? What's vritti? We talked about it. This is the first sutra itself. What's vritti? Anybody?
Fluctuations in the mind?
Yes. Whatever is happening in the mind, what changes are going on in the mind constantly at any given time, that's vritti. What's happening in the mind? Okay? And that's happening why? Because of the three gunas, right? If sattva guna is dominant, we're going to have certain kind of thoughts in the mind. If rajas is dominant, we're going to have certain different types of thoughts in the mind, etc., etc., right? And these gunas are in a constant state of flux, right? Constant state of flux. And therefore, the mind is constantly changing the content of the mind. Everything is changing all the time. And there is constant conflict between the vritti and the gunas, all right? The raga, you know, the five kleshas, they might say, okay, I like, you know, in my case, I always come back to the example of a mango, that's my favorite fruit. Okay, let's have this mango fruit, all right? And suddenly, the gunas, you know, rajas comes up. Forget about mango, let's go for a walk, okay? So there's a constant conflict going on between what's going on in the mind for one reason, and then the gunas come in and they play their own part and something else happens. And all this eventually is going to cause suffering. Okay, that's the whole point here. So what it says is that because of these three, parinama, transformation, tapa is the pain, and samskara is these impressions, and also because of the constant conflict that's going on between the gunas and the vrittis in the mind, everything is suffering. Okay, so let's go through my notes here. Okay, so these are the notes that I make after I read a few commentaries, because like I have mentioned every time, you know, we meet, that these sutras are so terse, so crisp, and so brief. It is not possible to understand the sutras without a commentary, okay? Because somebody has to have such deep knowledge of the subject that they can do a translation. Okay, I have absolutely no way of understanding the sutras without a commentary. Okay, so that's what I've been doing. So these three gunas are sattva, purity, rajas is action, and tamas is dullness. Now, there is a constant conflict among the three gunas, and that's what controls our mind, our vrittis, because of these three gunas. And we act according to the dominant guna at that given time. If rajas is dominant, I'm going to do some activity. I'm going to go for a walk, I'm going to go for a run, or I'm going to work on my project, or things like that. If it's a tamas guna, active, I'm going to be very dull, very passive. Sleepy, dull, tired, I'm fatigued, I have no energy, and all that stuff. I may have even negative thoughts. Okay? That's tamas. And sattva is purity, you know. I want to attend this yoga session or maybe go for this sutra class or things like that. That's probably happening because of the sattva guna. All right? And what the way we have to look at is any pleasure that we feel is very pleasurable, joyful for now, it's short-lived. It's there, absolutely. Okay? I'm enjoying my cup of tea, my cup of coffee. You know, I sip a very nice, I'm kind of cold weather and I sit and enjoy my cup of tea. But that joy, that pleasure is very short-lived. The way we want to look at is, everything that's happening is happening at the level of prakriti. It's happening at the level of this material being, right? Anything that happens at the level of prakriti is going to create more samskaras, more impressions in our mind. Every action, every impression eventually is going to create more actions. And it's a perpetual cycle then. Perpetual cycle. That means we'll never get rid of this cycle. We'll have pain, we have pleasure, we have pain, we have pleasure, and everything is going to bring about more samskaras, and we keep going. We think we are happy, but tomorrow we'll be unhappy. We never know what's going to happen. All right? So this whole thing keeps going. Pleasure, okay, it's like I said, is a short-lived thing and must accompany pain and suffering. And pleasure being a part of prakriti creates more samskaras, which accumulate more karma. And then suffering is caused by attachment, raga, right? And dvesha. Everyone knows that, right? If I'm attached to something, right? If I'm attached to my fruit of mango, and, you know, and this whole lockdown happens, and I have no way of going to the store and getting a mango, I'm suffering. I can't have my mango anymore. Right? That's just the way of, you know, life. Because I'm so attached, I have raga to this particular fruit. Now I can't get it. I desire it. Okay? So there's that desire in the mind, but I can't get it. So, I'm just going to tell myself it's okay for the time being. When the whole thing is over, you know, we'll get it back. But there's still that desire still there. Okay? Certain sense of.
I have a question. I guess with everything that's going on right now, if we are one of those people who is more maybe dominant with large us in action, you know, right now we can't do those actions. So are you suggesting that we just try to view it more as a temporary situation? Is that, as a coping mechanism? Because right now a lot of us are bored in actions that we are normally attached.
Well, you know, again, this whole thing eventually goes back to that whole concept that we have talked about called Ishvara Pranidhana. Ishvara Pranidhana is surrendering to the superior authority, right? Superior being. And that's a sense of accepting the situation without any judgment. Okay, and this whole, you know, Patanjali is very strong in this. He has talked about Ishvara Pranidhana in three different places, once in chapter 1 and then twice in chapter 2. So he thinks it's a very strong component of our practice. So what we are going through now, okay, I mean, it's going to cause suffering, right? It's going to, because we are not able to do things that we like. So raga, we are not able to meet our desires. And there are certain things which we don't like, okay, but they are perpetuating because of this, all right? So suffering kinds of increasing in some ways. But we have to get out of that, because realizing that that's not my true nature, and then there is something higher than us, and, you know, we kind of accept the whole thing as it is, because we have no control over the situation. And that's Ishvara Pranidhana becomes an important concept in this whole design of things. Okay, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
You know, I have a question, or I guess maybe just a comment. You know, I think that I'm understanding that he's saying that
if we deny, or maybe it is a question, if we deny ourselves pleasure, then does that make the pain also go away? I don't think he's saying that, really.
No, I don't think so. No, try that.
Yeah, right. I didn't think that would. And then
it's not about denying yourself about pleasure. It's not about not even having a desire, you know. Yeah. Definitely, you know, the whole thing is about.
But just to understand that those two things exist in the world,
right,
or in a person's experience,
right. So what we're saying is, there's nothing wrong in having a desire. There's nothing wrong in enjoying a mango, okay. But the point is, when you don't get it, are you miserable? Are you suffering?
Right.
Is there attachment so strong that you cannot live without it? That's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If you're okay with that, whether you have it, if you have it, you enjoy it. If you don't have it, enjoy it anyway. Enjoy mm-hmm. life. Something else. That's what he's saying, in my understanding.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Because, that makes sense.
Yeah. So desires are never satiated, they say, and lust for objects of pleasure causes pain. You know, lust is painful eventually. Any craving, you know, is all painful. Remember Buddhism, you know, I'm sure you know this, the Four Noble Truths of Buddhism, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very commonly known. All is suffering, everything is suffering. And the word that Patanjali has used, which is dukkham, is the same word used by Buddha, dukkham, same thing, same word in both in Sanskrit and Pali language that they use, same word. So all is suffering, and there is cause for suffering. You know, everything is, we know why it is happening, but then we can put an end to that suffering. How do we do that? In the Buddhism, they say follow the Eightfold Path, which sounds very familiar. And in yoga, we say follow the eight limbs of yoga, okay? So, very similar in words and in the concepts, you know, in Buddhism and the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And that's one reason most historians believe that Patanjali and Buddha, they were very close to each other in time frame. And they say within 200 to 300 years of each other. Nobody exactly says whether Buddha was first or Patanjali was first, or they could have been at the same time, who knows. But they are close in time because they are influenced by each other's philosophies. All right. So again, very quickly, these notes on these three terms that we use here. Parinama is change, transformation. Remember, everything in life undergoes constant change. And every change, as we know, brings about some consternation, some anxiety, every change, some suffering in some sense, right? If you don't have a job, you're suffering because you don't have a job. If you get a job, you're suffering because you're anxious. Oh my God, am I going to do well? What if my boss doesn't like me, etc., etc.? If you lose a job, you're suffering. Oh my God, how am I going to support my family? If you are not married, you're suffering. Oh my God, when am I going to get married? If you're married, you're suffering. Oh my God, when am I going to get rid of this person? Change, any kind of change, any kind of transformation brings anxiety in the mind, brings pain, brings a little bit of that suffering in the mind. That's parinama, basically. And even if it is good for now, it can convert into pain later on. Every pain, every, like I said, pleasure is short-lived. And then these are the three types of suffering, you know, tapa, mental anguish. And does anybody remember these words that we have used these before? Adi bhautika, adhyatmika, and adi daivika. Roughly, I think these are the three sufferings that everyone talks about, right? So very quickly, let's go over this. What is adi bhautika? Physical. Bhautika means physical. So that kind of suffering which is based on physical action, And they say they could be caused by others, by other animals, for example, a snake bite. You know, they always give snake bite, scorpion bite. In the old days, all these people lived in the forest. So these things were common. Now they are not very common. Okay, but mosquito bite is fairly common. And pollen is very common, you know. That's all Adi Bhautika, right? Anybody has pollen allergy here?
Yeah, I do.
I saw that you had a napkin with you. Okay.
Yeah, I know. Pollen allergy time.
Okay, so this is all Adi Bhautika, caused by physical causes, right? These are all considered physical causes. Then, and somebody can hit you, you know, somebody can hit you physically, shoot you, slap you, kick you, and you know, all that is physical, Adi Bhautika, right? Adhyatmika is mental suffering that I cause to myself, right? Let's take some examples of how can I cause suffering to myself. Anybody wants to give an example? How do I call?
Worrying about a few things, like, you know, worrying about a lot of things going in your life.
Right.
Unnecessarily stress and worry and, you know, future.
Very good.
Past, you know, thinking about the future.
Yes.
They are all a cause of worry.
Absolutely. Worry is about future, past, all kinds of anxiety that we have in the mind. Any other example, common examples of what we do to ourselves?
Being overly attached to something.
Absolutely. That's right. Overly attached and then...
I have the ice cream or else.
And then very common example is overeating, right? We overeat and then suffer. Or we eat the wrong kind of food, something that is not desirable for us, right? We do that all the time. You know, there are two Sanskrit terms that are used in some of the Upanishads and all that. One is called prayas, the other is called shreyas. Anybody heard those terms? Prayas and shreyas. Okay, so shreyas is something desirable and is good for us. Prayas is something pleasurable for us, may or may not be good. Okay. Now, the shreyas, which is desirable, may not be good, okay? May not be pleasurable, but it is desirable, right? So, again, common example, if I have high levels of cholesterol, eating this cake may not be desirable, but it is very highly pleasurable, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm very sick, you know, having some very medicine which is very, very unpleasant to take, it may be very unpleasant, unpleasurable, but it is very good for us. That's shreyas versus prayas. And it is mentioned in our text, those two words. You know, you should learn to differentiate between these two. Okay? So, adhyatmika is all the stuff that we bring it on ourselves, caused through physical suffering or mental anguish, worries, depression, anxiety, all these things are adhyatmika. Adhidaivika, caused through divine intervention, tsunamis, earthquakes, plague, fire, etc. Okay, these are the adhidaivika. So,
we are in adhidaivika, right?
Well,
what is going on right now?
Well, that's a good question, Prakash. Let's try to discuss that. Which category would you put it in? Is it adhidaivika, or is it adhibhautika, or adhyatmika?
I mean, whatever we know, it seems like adhidaivika.
What do we know?
Like, the virus got generated somewhere in China. I don't believe this conspiracy theory that it was physically created. You know, you never know, but looks like it came from the animal. Somehow we got contaminated. And
so, if it came from the animals, then it says it's adhibhautika.
It was not being attacked in that way, physical attack.
You know, I wonder if it's a second one. I can't pronounce it.
Adhyatmika.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, if someone had this desire for wild meat, even though they knew it's not a good thing to eat, and then they became infected, I don't know. Does that...
Yeah. To me, I would say it's all three. In my opinion, it's all three. It's a mixture of all three, you know.
Right, because it could also be the first one, too, because if we'd had a better response to the whole thing in the beginning, it could have been contained better.
Right.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm just kind of guessing it's a mixture of all three. But I think Prakash is right. In some sense, it's more adhidaivika because, you know, we have no control over it now that it's spread all over the place. You know, it's, well, but we had some control. Right. So it's all three. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And then samskaras, which are the past impressions. We all know that these impressions is what brings us likes and dislikes because this is exactly what the ego does, right? When you have an experience, any experience, the ego puts a label on it. I like it, I dislike it. I love it, I hate it. I want more of it, I don't want more of it. I don't want anything to do with it. Okay? So because of these samskaras, which have these labels, we either like something or dislike something. Okay? And then everything that we either have like or dislike for is eventually, like I said, it's going to cause suffering. Okay? Because there is a fear always associated with that. Fear of loss or fear of getting something that you don't want. You get that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they said that everything is suffering, even though it may give a temporary pleasure. All right. So that's what Vivekinaha. Vivekinaha means those people who have attained that state of mind which is very clear in thinking, discriminatory wisdom as they call it in English. In Sanskrit they call it prajna, prajna. So they have very, very strong prajna and they become viveki. Viveki means they have understood the distinction between good and bad, real and unreal. Those are the people. All right? So that's what it is. So we have suffering basically, but then Patanjali says, the next one it says, the sutra is Heyam Dukkham Anagatam. Heyam Dukkham Anagatam. That means, Anagatam means something that has not come yet, something that's going to happen in the future, may happen in the future. So, Dukkham or suffering that can happen in the future is Heyam. What the word Heyam means? It can be prevented. It's preventable. So suffering that might happen in the future is preventable. That's what the statement is, right? So again, you know, just like the Buddhism says there are four noble truths, Patanjali exactly has the same four, okay? And Patanjali says, yoga says that there is a suffering, okay? Suffering is avoidable, that's what he just said. Heyam. Heyam is avoidable suffering. But we should know what the cause is of this suffering, what's causing this suffering. So its causes. And we also know that it is possible to get rid of this suffering. That means liberation is possible. Okay, we know that. Patanjali says, talks about that. And then Patanjali goes into the methodology of how to get there eventually. Okay, so, very identical philosophy to what we saw in the Buddhism case. Patanjali has exactly the same concept here. Exactly. Okay, so what we suffered in the past, it's already gone. Let's not worry about that. See, normally what happens is we create more suffering because a year ago we had suffering or 10 years ago we had suffering. And we think about that and then we create more stories around it. And create more suffering for ourselves. All right? But what we want to do is to whatever happened in the past, let it be in the past. Let it go. Forget that. Right? So past suffering is already gone. Let's not relive it. Okay? You understand what I mean, right? We always do that. We relive the past and then become more miserable for no reason. All right? So, and then if you're going through some suffering now, which is again based on your prarabdha karma, you probably cannot do much about it. You know, we are going through this coronavirus thing, you know, it's there, it's written in our karma, and we have to go through this. All right? But the suffering that has not yet come in the future, that's avoidable. That means we don't. Question?
Yeah, I have one question though. Is it like right now everybody is going through the same thing? Is it collective karma that we are dealing with?
Well, Patanjali does not talk about collective karma, but you're absolutely right. There are some scriptures in our ancient texts, they talk about collective karma also, yes. They say there is a karma which can depend on your family karma or your societal karma, etc., national karma and all that. There are some concepts which talk about collective karma also, yes. Patanjali does not. Patanjali's focus is individual.
Okay.
All right. Okay, so once you have attained that realization of yogi, become a yogi, then you are sensitive like an eyeball. You know, the example given is an eyeball is very sensitive. There is a piece of hair in your eyeball. You suffer a lot, right? But most people are not sensitive to this suffering, and they just want to enjoy what's happening today. They don't want to plan for future. They don't want to think about the future. And then suffering comes, and then they suffer a lot because they have made no plans to eliminate suffering in the future. Now, it's all about, you know, principle of cause and effect, right? Like karma is all cause and effect, right? So if you had bad karma in the past, you're going to have suffering in the future. That's known. So, but if you know the cause, if you know what's causing suffering, right? If you know the ultimate cause of suffering, and if you can work your way to eliminate that cause itself, hey, we're good to go. Then we don't have to suffer anymore. So the whole idea of Patanjali's emphasis is on understanding what is the ultimate cause of suffering. What causes all that? Why do we suffer? Why do we go through this anguish, this mental pain, this all this anxiety and you know, all this depression and all that? What's causing all this? Once we know the cause, we can work on that then. Then we can find out what can be done to eliminate that cause. Okay? And then eventually again it's the same thing, elimination of these three types of suffering: adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika, the self-imposed, physical, and the natural causes. We talked about that just recently. Okay? So those are the sufferings that we want to get rid of. And this is where he talks about the cause of the suffering. Okay? So he now tries to tell us what's causing all this suffering anyway. All right. So what does the sutra say here? The sutra says, the words are drashtra drishyoho sanyogaha heya hetuhu. Okay? So, drashtra drishyoho sanyogaha heya hetuhu. Alright? Now, heya, like we said, heya is something that can be preventable. Okay? Hetu is the cause. So, he says the cause of that which is preventable, which is suffering, that we were talking about suffering here. So the cause of that suffering, which is preventable, we just said that in the previous sutra. Remember, he says it's preventable right here, it's avoidable. Okay? The cause of that suffering is sanyoga. What is sanyoga? Yoga? Union. Right? Sanyoga is union. Union of what? Union of drashtra and drishya. So now, This is where it's coming into the deep philosophy which is available in Sankhya philosophy. You know, it's all, this is all part of the Sankhya philosophy here. Okay? Again, we talked about the two aspects, Purusha and Prakriti, right? Purusha is the pure consciousness, our true self. Okay, that's the pure consciousness, pure self. Not adulterated by the ego. What is adulterated by the ego? Prakriti. Which is what we have in our mind. Our mind is completely dominated by the ego. And that's what this Prakriti is all about. Prakriti is all these 23 elements. And I have a chart here later on. I'm going to show you those 23 elements. Alright? So that is Prakriti. Right? So Drashtra here means Purusha. Patanjali uses different terms for these Purusha and Prakriti in different places. Drashta means one who sees, one who observes, one who is watching. So the observer, the watcher, or the one who is the seer, that's the Purusha. And Drishya, what is he watching? He's watching the Prakriti. It's called Drishya. Drishya means something that is seen, okay? Something that is visible to us. Okay, so what he's saying is, it's the apparent union, sanyoga, between the Purusha, who is the observer, and Prakriti, what's being observed. So, this union between the two, it's an apparent union. It's union that we believe it is correct. All right, it's our belief, our misunderstanding. That union is what we really are. Our ego has taken over. Ego thinks I am the supreme. And therefore, that is the cause. So he says, this union between the Purusha and Prakriti, the Atma or the soul, and the Prakriti, which is the our mind, body, and the intellect thing, that union is the Hetu, which is cause of what? Cause of that Heya, that suffering that is preventable. All right, so the cause of that avoidable pain is the union of the seer and the Prakriti. Everyone get that?
Yes, I have one small question here. Seer and seen, Ishta and Drishya, there is also a role of a process of seeing, right? I mean, Drashta, which is seeing, Drishya, which is being seen, and the process of seeing. Mm-hmm. Right, where that comes in?
It comes in, yeah. It will come in. You know, we talked about all that in chapter 1, okay? Okay, so the terms Patanjali used in there was grahitra, grahan, and grahya. Those are the three words he used in Sanskrit. One that is being observed was the grahya, or one that's being seen or observed or grabbed. Grahana was the process of doing that, and Grahitra was one who is observing all that. Okay, so all that is a part of the understanding of Prakriti. All right.
Okay.
And this whole process is actually happening at the level of the intellect. That whole process of seeing. Okay. So, because it's the intellect which is analyzing everything that's coming in through the five senses or through the memory and all that, okay?
Right.
And that's what is being projected to or presented to the Purusha. That's what is being seen. So the process, the owner of that process is our buddhi or the intellect.
Right. And can we also say Purusha as unmanifested thing and Prakriti as one which is manifested?
No. The Purusha is beginningless, endless. It was never manifested.
Right. That's what I said, unmanifested.
But it unmanifest, you know, the moment you say the word unmanifest, it assumes that it's going to manifest at some point in time.
Okay.
That's not what it is.
Okay.
The only thing that is unmanifest is Prakriti. Okay, unmanifest is Prakriti. Mula Prakriti is called unmanifest Prakriti, right? Because that's going to manifest into these physical elements of mind, body, intellect, and all that eventually. And I'm going to show you that whole chart I have that slide coming up, how that manifestation happens, evolution happens. But we never use the term unmanifest for Purusha because it's not going to manifest anything.
Okay.
So the reason I you know, it's important to understand this is, you know, when you talk about the word yoga, right? We practice yoga, and you know, I go to these workshops for these yoga teachers, trainees, you know, people who are undergoing training for yoga, becoming yoga teachers, and just ask them what yoga mean to you. And majority of the time I get this answer, yoga means union. Okay? Union of what? Anybody know the answer what most people give? Union of what?
Mind and body.
And?
And soul.
Mind, body, and soul, right?
DMS.
So, most people tend to just kind of say that blindly, mind, body, and soul. Union of mind, body, and soul. That's yoga. They don't understand what it means. If I ask them further questions, they have no idea. They say, oh, this is what I know. You know, mind, body, and soul. But here, now, look at this. Next statement. It says, this union between mind, body, which is Prakriti, and soul, which is Purusha, right? This union is the cause of this entire suffering that we are going through. So, understand this carefully. Mind, body, and soul. You don't say yoga is the union between mind, body, and soul. This statement here strongly says that it is this union between mind, body, and the soul which is the reason for this suffering, is the cause of that unavoidable pain. The entire suffering that we're going through is caused by this union. Okay? So never say that yoga is the union of mind, body, and soul. Alright? It is the separation between the mind, body, and soul. Isolation.
I'm getting confused a little bit.
Okay, go ahead.
So the question is, you said yoga, union of body, mind, and soul, but that is the cause of all the pain.
Right.
So doing yoga, you're going to separate that thing.
Right.
To avoid the pain.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
By practicing yoga, we are trying to understand our true nature. Once we understand that, then we are not going to identify with this mind and body. So we are going to be separated out.
I see. Got it.
So that's why I'm right here. Refutes the common misconception where people say the yoga is union of mind, body, and soul. Don't say that. Okay, but how does the whole thing function? You know, this buddhi or the intellect functions based on the consciousness that is reflected from Purusha, from the seer, from this Atma. Now, one thing which most people find it very strange to understand is that according to our philosophy of Sankhya, the only thing that has consciousness is our soul, is our Purusha, is our Atma. Everything else that we talk about, this mind, this body, this intellect, our intuition, everything has no consciousness of its own. It's unconscious, as they say, non-conscious. Okay? So how does it function? They say, that's what the Sankhya philosophy says, that the buddhi functions because it gets consciousness reflected from the Purusha, reflected from the Atma. There's a reflection of consciousness which is available, which is prevalent in the buddhi, and that's how it can function. The whole thing can function. The whole Prakriti can function that way. So that's the whole concept of Purusha and Prakriti. Alright? It functions based on the consciousness reflected from the Purusha, but due to this ignorance that we always talked about, avidya. Avidya is ignorance. Buddhi and the objects of Prakriti take on apparently the nature of Purusha. They believe buddhi or the ego actually believes that that's the master, and it takes control over it. And Purusha, you know, at that time, you know, because it's not realized, it doesn't know what's going on. But it's, you know, this whole association that happens right at the beginning of the creation. This contact, this conjunction, happens right at the beginning of creation. So it is, they say, it is beginningless. This avidya is beginningless. It started right from day one, from this whole creation, right? But it has an end. This avidya can end, right? That's what we are all working towards. To end this avidya so that we can realize our true nature. It's beginningless, but it is not endless. It can have an end. Alright? So that's the Prakriti and Purusha. So, you know, these people, they give an example in one of the texts. It says, so suffering as an example is a thorn piercing the sole of the foot causes suffering. But you can avoid the suffering by either not putting your foot on your thorn or wearing shoes. Okay? So, suffering, you know, we have to know the cause nicely and then work on that. That's basically what it's saying. All right? In buddhi, the suffering is caused by rajas or tamas dominating over sattva. That we know that, right? Okay. Eventually, even sattva causes suffering. Eventually. But most of our suffering comes from rajas and tamas. Okay. Eventually, we have to go past sattva also, as we know that. The term used in the Bhagavad Gita is gunatita. Anybody heard that term? Gunatita? Beyond the gunas. Atit means beyond. Gunatita. So go beyond the gunas. Okay? Alright. So we get all kinds of anxiety, craving, lust and all that, and physical suffering, ulcers, indigestion, illness of any kind, etc., etc. All this is happening. And eliminate the suffering by eliminating its cause, which is avidya. Okay? That's the whole idea here. Avidya is the ignorance of not knowing who I am in reality, my true nature. Okay? Now this, like I just mentioned, the conjunction or this joining or this superimposition or this apparent conjunction between Purusha and Prakriti is due to ignorance, and it is eternal. Eternal in the sense it started from day one. It's beginningless. However, their separation is not eternal. It can be ended, and that's our goal of yoga, that's our goal of life, is to end that union, completely eliminate that union so that we can understand our true nature as being pure consciousness. Okay? So we are pure consciousness, pure being, and this whole body, mind, intellect is given to us for a purpose. And the purpose is to have an experience of this life. Okay,
and that's is this conjunction between the Purusha and the Buddhi, does that happen like when you're like a child and start thinking?
It's happening from day one. When I say day one, when the creation happened in the very first place, not in this birth, previous millions of births. Okay, it started all that point. That's the only reason we are having these births and rebirths, because of that avidya, because of that union. Okay, that's why this whole concept of reincarnation, rebirth, is all a part of that whole avidya, because it started from day one and it continues now. So, this conjunction or suffering can be ended by self-realization, which is the term that, you know, many people use, or realizing the separation between Purusha and Prakriti. Okay.
One question, Swamiji.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, self-realization, right? When you realize that you are not this body and mind, right? You are separate from that. Once you realize that, is that the end to this life-to-life thing?
Yes, right. That's what is going to exhaust our karma. Not the prarabdha karma, but the total karma, exhaust the karma, and therefore we will not have a rebirth after that. Once that realization happens completely, it's not temporary. Sometimes people have temporary realization, then they go back into that same rigmarole. Right? Many people have suffered that. They do self-realization for a moment and for a while, but then they again somehow there are some seeds in their mind which fructify again, and they go back to this whole cycle again. Okay, but if you are completely clear now that yes, you have attained self-realization and you know exactly what's going on, then there's no rebirth after that. Okay. All right. So, this is again a very big topic, and I think I'm getting tired. So I said, okay, if you stop here, I know it.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
it's heavy stuff, you know, because it's a lot of philosophy from Sankhya. And, I would strongly recommend that you please read up on that, reflect on that, and then, you know, we can probably get a better understanding.
No, you can sit.
Say it again?
Mm-hmm. Hey? Teacher, can take a picture of me and be me.
Oh, that's a private conversation. Okay. Okay. So, let's stop here today. And